Thank you for tuning in to the podcast for LGBT youth. Safe spaces can be hard to find. This podcast is brought to you by the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. My name is Carrie Robidoux, and I'm a Youth Development Extension Educator. Joining me for this conversation today is my colleague, Joe Rand, who's also an Extension Educator with the university. Joe, thank you for sharing your experiences and expertise in this podcast today.
Thank you for having me, Carrie.
You know, I like to start our podcast with an opportunity for listeners to hear about you and your connection to this work. Can you share with us your experience and interest in working with young people and specifically with LGBT youth?
Absolutely. So I've been a youth developer for many years. I began my career working in ELCA Lutheran churches as a youth director, and then transitioned into a role with Extension as a 4-H program coordinator. And I worked in Sherburne County for about 4 years before moving into this role as an Extension educator. In addition to my career working with young people, I also spend a lot of my free time working in youth development with various organizations. That might be youth at a school in theater and speech work or community theaters. And so have had the opportunity to take what I do for my work and apply it outside of my work and learn a lot along the way from the young people that I have interaction with outside of my work. And I feel like that has been an additional classroom for me, an additional way for me to learn about different walks of life and diversity in the world. I think working with LGBT youth has become a passion of mine because it's something that I didn't have growing up and didn't have the language I needed to be able to talk about my own experience. While I had supportive adults around me, they weren't adults who understood or had any language or understanding to talk about what it meant to be part of the LGBT community. And that is really what has continued to fuel this passion and need to work with kids and to be that support and to be the person that they can have a conversation with or feel safe around, try to be a role model for them when there aren't a ton of role models, people that have a similar experience, and to try to create spaces where they can be themselves authentically and not feel like they have to have their guard up, which is how I felt for a long time. And so to let them be who they are and feel really comfortable and happy and live out their truth.
Joe, I appreciate you joining us in this podcast today because you bringing in that perspective as a professional, as a volunteer in all of the programs that you work in, and then also as a role model yourself is so valuable for all of us to learn from. Let's continue with more background on the topic as we are thinking about our LGBT youth and safe spaces, which are hard to find. You wrote a blog post about this topic, and then you also, and in that blog post, you mentioned three resources. So I'd like to get to those three resources in a little bit, but let's start with the why. Really, why is this so important? Sure. I'm going to quote you from the blog post that you wrote that you said, "For adolescents, access to safe spaces is a crucial part of development and exploring self-identity." And you go on to discuss how this can be a challenge for any adolescent, right? I mean, this is hard. This is a task. But absolutely, as the title of this podcast states, safe places can be especially hard to find for those LGBT youth.
Yeah. And real quickly, I just wanted to clarify, LGBT does stand for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. Sometimes you might have seen it written as GLBT. Sometimes there are additional letters attached to that. And I would encourage you to do a little research to find out what all those others mean, because we're not going to delve into them today. And also point you toward an additional blog post that I will do in a couple of weeks about language and will help define some of those things. But getting back to finding safe spaces and access to safe spaces, primarily the work that I have done has been in rural Minnesota. And so once you get outside the Twin Cities, there is a different perspective, if you will. And there's a higher population density of LGBT folks within urban settings. And so once you leave that urban setting, the mindset of the community is often different. And what that means is that for those kids who are exploring their identity while they're in adolescence, don't always have a place that feels safe if they don't fit into the stereotypical male or female heterosexual box. As we learn more and more about socio-emotional learning and think about the YPQA pyramid, at the base of all of their development is being able to feel emotionally safe and meeting that need in order for them to be able to develop into who they can be. And so we have to be more intentional about how we create those spaces, especially when we get into more rural areas where folks may not understand what it means to be part of the LGBT community because they haven't had any interaction with that or they haven't had education around that. And so we have to do all those things. So it's a big task to be able to educate the community and to try and provide safe spaces for kids to be themselves in order that they can figure out who they are during that really hard adolescent years. When I was doing some research for my graduate work around this, the thing that I found that seems to work the best is forming a group. It doesn't matter where it is, but as long as youth have access to other people that have a similar experience that they can have conversation with, that they feel supported by, that they can develop a quality relationship with, that's the space. But it also means that in some cases, they do need a physical space. One of the best ways we can do that is through a GSA, which is often in a school setting where kids who identify as LGBT or part of that community can come together and just have conversation with each other about their experience and be supportive of one another. But it's also important to advocate for the physical space because schools don't always allow youth to have those groups in school. And if they don't have that as a resource, it's hard to find another free place that feels safe where kids can come together and be able to support one another. So it's both a physical space. It's also about the relationships that kids develop and having that space where they feel like they're part of a group of people that has a similar experience to them and a group of people that can be a support network for them.
And you mentioned the school setting that there may or may not be a safe place. How are out-of-school programs able to be unique and offer those safe spaces in ways that schools perhaps can't?
You know, as part of the university, we uphold the non-discriminatory policies that they have adopted. And so what that means is that any walk of life is welcome to be part of a 4-H club or 4-H group. And so that means that we have the opportunity to provide a space for those youth where they can feel safe, but also then where they can learn from one another. When policy or values or belief systems don't allow for a safe space for kids that are LGBT youth or identify as an LGBT youth, out-of-school time programs can, 4-H can provide that safe space. Because we're a part of a larger organization, the University of Minnesota, we don't discriminate against any walk of life. And so we want to make sure that they feel welcome, that they have a space to learn, that they can be authentically who they are, that they're part of something bigger. And then we can also provide them connection back to the organization that we are a part of, connection back to the university, so that when they feel isolated in their community because they may not have a role model or they may not have a friend or they may not have a great support system, they can find one. And they can help connecting back to that resource like the university can help them along that developmental journey while they're figuring out who they are, whether it's support through conversations with folks or reading about things and just having access to resources, especially in a rural setting where they might not have access to that normally.
You bring up bullying in your blog post as something that is really critical for us to think about with this group of young people. I'm going to quote something you said, that the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network reported in 2015 that in many states, and includes Minnesota, where we are, schools are unsafe and unwelcoming for LGBT students, and that bullying of marginalized youth is still very prevalent.
Yeah, and bullying for all kids, right? I mean, we're constantly talking about bullying, and we need to get a handle on it. With regard to LGBT kids, it's even more prevalent. The Gay and Lesbian Straight Education Network does a survey every few years on Minnesota school, on schools across the nation, but specifically there is a report on Minnesota schools. And one of the statistics is that the majority of LGBT students in Minnesota regularly heard anti-LGBT remarks. 83% of those kids sometimes, often, or frequently heard the word gay used in a negative way. 83%. So it's a pretty high instance of negative reinforcement of who they might be and their identity, which is incredibly damaging for those kids who are trying to figure out who they are when they feel like the community that they're in doesn't support or doesn't understand or thinks negatively about who they might be or what their sexual orientation or gender expression might be.
Now, you've really described for us the why, I think, in the first part of this podcast. Youth workers listening to this may be wondering, okay, how do I include and provide a safe space for LGBT youth in my program? Let's move on to the resources. You have three specifically that we're going to talk about today that you have used and that you would recommend to others. The first one is GLSEN, which is Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. Can you tell us more about that particular resource?
Sure. And that's also where that information I just shared with you comes from, is the Gay and Lesbian Straight Education Network. They're the ones that do that survey every couple of years of schools. School Climate Survey is what it's called. They also provide what's called a Safe Space Kit. It provides a lot of education around language, around how to give support to kids that are in the LGBT community, and to train their allies. But it also uses methods and strategies that can be used for any sort of diversity training that you have need for. So application across a lot of different cultures. That's the first one, and it's a great resource. The second one is a free curriculum from an organization called Teaching Tolerance, and you can find that online. They have lesson plans that you can adapt for whoever your audience is that help youth understand diversity across different communities that they might be a part of. Really effective ways to break down cultural barriers and any prejudice that they might have, but also helping kids understand what their biases might be.
Give us an example of how you've used that curriculum or ways that you've seen it at work in the programs.
So I actually have used components of all three of these that we are talking about with our Minnesota State ambassadors, who are our youth leaders in Minnesota 4-H that do a lot of training themselves. It's an elite applied for group of folks that then also train other 4-H'ers in Minnesota, and they decide what they want to talk about, to work on, And this year they did a lot of work around empathy and self-worth. And so part of that was establishing an appreciation for one's own identity and living out one's truth. And so I took components from the Safe Space Kit, components from Teaching Tolerance, and then finally from a resource called We Connect from the University of Minnesota, and put those things together to create a one-day workshop that I conducted with the state ambassadors in the fall.
Give us an example of one activity from that workshop.
Sure. So one of the activities that the ambassadors engaged in, and I know they used when they were working with other 4-H'ers, was an activity with a potato. And I passed out potatoes to all the ambassadors in the room and asked them to create a story about their potato and who it was. And they got to share that story with everybody in the room. And then we put all the potatoes back in the bag and mixed them up and then dumped them out on the floor. And the ambassadors had to try to find their original potato again. Part of that activity was for them to recognize that our diversity goes well beyond skin deep, but also to realize that everybody has a story. And that story is part of who we are. The story is part of our diversity as well. And so being able to recognize that and using that information or knowing that information in order to develop more quality relationships with others.
And finally on your list is a University of Minnesota extension curriculum called We Connect. You referenced this curriculum earlier in your example activity, but tell us more about it and how you've used it.
Yeah, We Connect came out a few years ago and was developed by some of our 4-H staff. And it is a curriculum that helps youth understand their connection to our ever-changing global community and has a lot of great activities in there. I used it specifically with my youth leaders in a county. There's an activity that is centered around a society called the Albatross Society. And it's a fictitious society. And I always think of the albatross, the bird, but it's not a bird. It has nothing to do with birds. But it has two folks, a gal and a guy, act out a scene silently. And one of the things that happens is that the male is sitting in a chair and a gal comes over and kneels in front of him. And there's some other components there too. But then what happens is that you ask all of those that have been observing, what did they just see? And a lot of things come out about females being inferior or being a servant to this man. Once you read the story about the Albatross Society and give the context to it, you find out that it's actually the opposite, and that it's actually very honorable for the woman to be doing what she's doing. And it sort of blows the kids' minds because they had all these their own ideas about what was happening, and that's their bias coming into play and their own experiences and making assumptions about what was happening when they didn't know the context. And so what it does is help them understand those things and understand that they do have a bias that they didn't realize, and that they do place judgment on things based on their own life experiences, and that those judgments could be wrong. And so it's really empowering for them, I think, to be able to recognize those things and then apply them to different settings in their own lives where they might have assumptions about other youth, other adults, but then to have them think, but maybe I don't know the whole story. Maybe I don't know the context. So it's really important for me to find out what that is in order to have appropriate interaction with this other person rather than place judgment on them first.
Well, Joe, I thank you for sharing those three resources with us and sharing how you've used them in the 4-H program. But I think it's important to recognize that it's applicable to other programs, and that those are resources that are valuable.
Absolutely. Whether it's, you know, if there needs to be education around, you know, LGBT diversity and inclusion topics, these are great resources for any group. You know, it might be a Boys and Girls Club or a YMCA or any place that youth gather and need some education about this. But it's also incredibly important to educate adults so that adults can be the support for the youth. So it might also be that you are engaging in some of this education in a different group that you're a part of as an adult. And so it could be a community group, it could be a church group, it could be anything like that. But making sure that we all are educating ourselves, and so that we can create safe spaces for all our kids and be supportive for all our kids.
Well, Joe, I want to thank you for sharing your insights on this very important topic of providing those safe and inclusive spaces for all of the young people we work with, and specifically the LGBT youth in our communities. You've shared with us resources of curriculum, survey data, a safe space toolkit of sorts, and the importance of not only educating our young people, but also the adults who are working with our young people. So I thank you for sharing with us today.
Thanks. It was a pleasure to be able to talk about it, and I hope that it is helpful.
Well, that is going to conclude this podcast, but please look us up on www.extension.umn.edu/youth, and you will find more information on working with young people during out-of-school time, as well as other research, training, and events that we offer. We also encourage you to look up our Minnesota 4-H program. You can keep this conversation going with Joe by checking out our Youth Development Insight blog. We referenced that a few times during this podcast, and we would invite you to engage in that conversation, ask questions, share other resources that you're using to help to provide safe spaces for LGBT youth in your programs. This is Carrie Robidoux from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.